This is Transistor.fm.
5, 4, 3, 2. It's that bad?
Wait, how delayed was it? I clapped with you.
Did you go on one?
I clapped exactly when you clapped.
Try it again. 5, 4, 3, 2. No.
Yes!
You're lying to me.
Okay, do it with me then. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, do it again this time, but do it like actually clap on one, not on zero.
Yeah. Okay. 5. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
How was that for you?
Yeah, delayed.
How delayed?
About one.
Interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It's interesting because in conversation, it doesn't feel terribly delayed.
No.
All right. Well, should we get into it?
I think we need an explanation. So this episode that people are about to listen to, we recorded before the new year. So this is
from 3 months old.
3 months? Is it that long? Oh, no. Yeah.
If we were doing our weekly podcast, we'd be doing like our 100th anniversary episode.
Oh, no. But you get that feeling where, you know how like when you don't respond to someone's message in a timely fashion and then you feel worse and worse about not responding?
And so then you don't respond again.
So then you don't respond. Well, the flippin' listeners of our first episodes were so enthusiastic about it that it felt like, how could we possibly follow up?
Wow, I hadn't thought about it that way, and now I know you're right.
That's a piece of it where I was so excited about just having conversations that felt like they weren't that important and we didn't have to do anything that special for, because that pressure is there for videos that we make where there is a sense of, hey, we got to make good things and they got to be improving and they've got to be good. And I was excited about a podcast format because I was hoping there'd be less of a sense of, oh, we have to have it be good.
Right, yeah, I think I felt the exact same way, which is that I wanted to get into this to have a medium that was lower pressure and it didn't feel like it needed to be 50% self-promotion. At least we could just have the conversations, put it out there. It did seem simple. But you're right, I have the exact same feeling now where some people, I guess, are listening and enjoy it. And so they're like, what's next? What's the next one going to be? And then I get scared and I feel like nothing's going to be... I mean, I'm not tooting our horn on the first two episodes or anything, but I'm still always scared that what if the next episode we do, it loses the magic. Magic. I mean, even saying we had magic is...
This is kind of my way to short circuit around procrastinating the release of the next episode, because I have been procrastinating it. And so being able to explain ahead of time, hey, this is an episode that we recorded a while ago, and this is some of the reason why it's late. Part of the reason why it's late is, I think I realized it in the recording of our first two episodes, but starting the podcast definitely was this outlet where I think, as you said, when you have a main obligation that you're looking after, you start new things because it feels naughty. It's like, it's exciting to have something else that you're going after. And so that was certainly, I'm realizing that that's what starting this was for me. I was kind of avoiding some of the main obligations that I was a little bit nervous looking after in the main timeline of life, where there's a lot going on. And this podcast that people are about to listen to, we actually recorded before the new year. And it was a conversation where I was expressing, I think in a large part, how I was starting to realize why I was so disappointed in my performance in that year, beyond just pandemic stuff, beyond that, just how I had expectations and how I had let myself down. And I distinctly remember when we were done recording that episode, I remember just realizing, oh, I'm like actually really burnt out. And that feels so cliche to like have a moment where I'm just like, wow, I'm really burnt out. But what followed in the weeks after we recorded this episode was some of my lower weeks that I can remember in a long time.
Yeah.
Just, and not in a sense of like, not in a sense of like this really dark place, but in a sense of just completely lacking any energy to do any of the things that I love doing. And that was a very confusing experience. It certainly wasn't enjoyable, but it helped me acknowledge, okay, I'm a little overwhelmed in life right now. I'm taking on too much. Let's just take a moment to pause everything and start to lay a healthier foundation for now. And when I'm ready to come back and edit and release these podcast episodes, I know that the kind of people that are listening to this will be supportive of that. And I'll be very excited to get episodes out again. So,
and do you feel like you're there now? Like you're in a better place, more capable of thinking about this podcast and executing on it? Or
yeah, I think I am certainly in a better place now. And I'm cautious because it my tendency is to go, if I have low points in me showing up in my life, after those low points, I tend to think, okay, I'm back in it, and then immediately ramp everything back up to 100. So I'm trying to cautiously ramp things back up in. And in part of that process, we recorded another episode not that long ago. And so I'm excited to start getting some of the stuff back out again. But it is humbling to feel like I'm so used to the start of the year being like kicking things into gear. And I come out of, usually the fall is not my favorite time because I'm disappointed on how the year's finishing. So when I come into the new year, I'm so used to like harnessing that disappointment. And I would say this is the first year where harnessing disappointment did not work in the same way it had worked for me in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes total sense. And I'm happy to be back with you. I'm happy to have a few episodes ready to release.
Oh, we got episodes.
I'll be honest. This episode was recorded so long ago. And as someone who didn't edit it, I don't remember it at all. I don't know what we talked about. I blend our podcast conversations in my memory with our regular conversations, with just our phone calls, FaceTimes, whatever. So I don't know. It'll be a surprise to me to listen to again. Okay, let's roll the episode.
Hey, friend. Welcome back to the Make Stuff Club, the show for dysfunctional creatives, where the goal is simple. Make good stuff, make some money, and as much as possible, avoid self-sabotaging your work, your relationships, and your life in the process. I'm joined by Jesse Driftwood, fellow maker of internet videos, chronic procrastinator, and connoisseur of tungsten-shaped cubes.
Let's not talk about the cube.
Oh, I think the whole podcast should be about the cube, Jesse.
Wait, hold on. Didn't you just call it a tungsten-shaped cube?
Is it not shaped like a cube?
Well, no, it is. It's a cube, but it's not shaped like tungsten. It's a
tungsten. Oh, a cube shaped like
a cube shaped tungsten. I don't even know how to call it. It's a cube of tungsten. I bought a cube of tungsten.
I think if you are curious about that, you should just Google how to find a cube of tungsten and what they go for on the market. Because
you're not going to like it.
You're not going to like it. But Jesse loves his.
I do. It's very fascinating. It's so tiny and so heavy, and your brain doesn't know what to do with that information.
What was this, like an Instagram ad? How did you find out that there was tungsten cubes that you could buy?
I mean, we've got to backpedal a little bit here. So recently, did you see that like ex-Israeli Space Force guy who was like worked for the Israeli Space Force for like 30 years and then he retired and came out and was
aliens?
Like
aliens?
Yeah, he's like, by the yes. way, aliens exist. Trump knows about them.
Yes.
And we've been talking to the Intergalactic Federation. So, yes. Anyways, so it was late one night and I couldn't sleep. And so I go down like weird YouTube rabbit holes. So I'm going down all this space stuff, this alien stuff. And then I just start going down rabbit holes of matter, just different materials that exist in the world. And somehow I was like stumbled into this idea of like, what is the heaviest thing per size that you can buy? Because I'd love to just feel what that feels like to pick something up that's way heavier than it should be given its size. And then I found like you can get like pebbles of osmium, but they were kind of expensive and they were just tiny. And then I found this tungsten cube.
Kind of expensive in
I found
in
these tungsten cubes on Amazon. Oh my goodness. First of all, do you want me to read you one of the reviews?
I really do. I think, okay. Yes.
Tungsten cube, 1.5 inches. So it's a 1.5 by 1.5 inch cube of tungsten with a slight alloy involved so that it's workable. And it weighs 1 kilogram. Here's the first review. It's all 5-star reviews, by the way, from verified purchasers. Is your money burning a hole through your pocket? Are you tired of making it rain using merely lightweight plebeian dollar bills? Are you looking for something that is small but packs a monster punch? Do you want to be the coolest guy on the block? If so, this block is for you. It goes on for a while, and then eventually he gets to, this cube is powerful. It's divisive. It will spark debate and controversy in your social circles. Your friends will make fun of you for it. They will ridicule your life choices. They will lose respect for you. You will lose friends. You will gain friends, but mostly you will lose friends. All of this will happen until they come to actually hold the cube in their hands and finally understand its epic properties. At this point, any and all naysayers will immediately understand. The tables will turn. An overwhelming sensation of cube envy will come rushing through their very souls. And at that moment, just when you thought your brilliant purchase couldn't possibly be any further validated, well, it just has been. And the reviews just go on and on like this. This review says, this cube cured my mortality. Like, they're so ridiculous, but people rave about it. I told my wife, I was like, listen.
I could imagine, though, you picking it up would be an entirely different experience than just hearing you talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Like, I showed Dorothy, I was like, hey, I've got something to show you. And I'm holding it. She goes, it's just a cube. And I was like, oh, is it? And I give it to her and her arms drop. She's like, it's what? Why is it so heavy? Like, even just a child's brain goes, no, that something's not right here. Anyway, so it's funny, actually, that we bring up the tungsten cube, because I always laugh hearing you say in the intro line, not burn out, try to make some money.
Yes.
And I actually love that line, because I'm sure we've talked about this before. I'm actually not motivated by money. And I don't say that to toot my own horn. I actually think I have an unhealthy disrespect for money. I just don't know how to, like, be emotionally attached to it. I don't know how to feel like it's important. And no doubt that is, like, I have had a very, I'm in a very privileged position. I grew up with not very much. Like, buying shoes was a big deal. And when I got into skateboarding, I'm like, Mom, I need skate shoes. And so it was always like, we go to Walmart and we buy the $30 shoes instead of going to West 49 or whatever. And so I think probably growing up and building my own business, where I've, like, air quote, made it, you know, where I actually no longer, for the first time, have to stress month to month, like, am I going to pay my rent this month? And honestly, that change happened about a year ago. But
yeah.
So now, I don't know, I guess I just make bad financial decisions sometimes, and I buy 1.5-inch tungsten cubes.
Yeah, that's kind of where the make some money thing comes in for me, is that to me is like your baseline being met without much effort. Hmm. And the idea of being able to save for the future more responsibly. My wife just turned 27. That means I'm going to turn 27 soon. And the gravity of not having done some of the things that I assumed at 18 that I would have done by now financially is kind of weighing a little bit.
Like, but, what do you mean? What do you think some of those things are?
Oh, I think I would have assumed without question by being 27 that I would be, in a given year, be making a lot more than I am now.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And at different times I was motivated by, hey, I want to go get that job because that job makes me more. But I think it's like a hierarchy of, I'm sure that there's some quote over there. there's some quote that I remember some guy saying of like, frick, it's left me.
You know, where, dude, the job you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
No, it was one of those ones about, it's a lot easier to not worry about money when your, like, basic needs are met kind of question thing.
I mean, I don't know the quote, but that feels true.
Yeah, I'll have to chop that section out. I don't know exactly what I was saying. What did you say?
That's all right. I don't know. I think this whole rant is now just starting to sound like Jesse's so rich.
You know? I know, that's what I'm trying to save you from yourself.
No, someone needs to save me from myself. I hope in the future, like on our 1000th episode, we've evolved so far where I'm like, I bought a cube of dwarf star.
I love this. I really do. The year's coming to an end.
Oh my goodness. Boy, is it ever.
When years end, do you have feelings about your year previous? What does entering these final months feel like to you?
This has been a weird year. Yeah. I think you know that. I think this year wasn't what anyone thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And I don't know right now if I feel relief that the year is over. Probably shouldn't, because all the things that made this year bad don't magically go away when the, you know, when the mm-hmm. ball drops. But I mean, the way I view life and time has definitely changed this year. I feel less concerned about writing out, like, this is my 5-year plan, this is my whatever, because this year taught me just how quickly things can change, right? Like, do you remember back in March and you're just starting to think, you're like, wow, this whole COVID thing might actually be kind of serious. And it was like, a week later, I'm literally terrified of touching physical objects, right? Things can just change so quickly that it feels almost foolhardy. I think that's a sentence to plan too much into the future.
Yeah, I haven't been someone that is very vocal about what my future goals are. And when I imagined the kinds of things that we would sit down and talk about, unpacking some of the process of what this whole, what it is that we're doing with the things we make on the internet and what kind of business is that trying to build, I imagine that that conversation would be part of it. Because as much as it's fun to be like, oh, we're just making things we like, in my head, I have had some plan. Like, there mm-hmm. was there, the reason why I spend so much time on certain kinds of things isn't just because I enjoy it. It's also mm-hmm. because it fits into a picture of where I see my life and my career going. It's not just aimless. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that it wasn't aimless. And it's very interesting to feel like I was kind of on this 5-year, I had been telling myself I was on this like 5-year trajectory that was building up and laying the foundation of certain skill sets, of certain audience building things. So that way there's an audience, basically going through the process of getting ready to do what it is. I imagine kind of my mid-20s to mid-30s main focus being, and what this year did was kind of, this is hard. So I usually at the end of the year am disappointed in the year. And I think that's just a personality thing where I set higher expectations on myself than I can reach. And part of that allows me to, I think, get things done and do things well. But then the other part of it is I have to inevitably reconcile the difference of the two of, hey, this is my expectations, and this is where I actually hit this year. And when the year comes to an end, and I feel those, I kind of see it as like a progress bar as the months count by. And once we hit number 9 and we hit September, usually the fall can be kind of rough for me headspace wise, where I'm just disappointed.
Yeah. And that's interesting.
Usually there's a distinctive day in the month of December as we come up to holiday plans and there's family things going on, and I'm still scrambling not to get it all done, but just like the last few things.
Yeah.
There's usually a day in December where I just go, even those last few things, I won't get done. And then I just decide, okay, I won't get them done. And then I just kind of like,
right. At a certain point, you have to let it go.
And I dissociate from what those goals were originally. And I kind of just go, okay, that's life. And then I eventually just end up telling myself, hey, it's not worth feeling shame over that. It's fine. And this is like a dialogue that's happening internally for the most part. And obviously some of those conversations are happening with my wife as I'm trying to get some of these projects done before we board a flight to go visit family. This year, no flying's happening, obviously. And I'm saying all that. Mm. Because you know that scene in Fight Club at the very, very end?
Right, where the one where they fight?
The one where they're standing. I don't even know the names of the characters. I saw this movie once when I was like 16 and I haven't seen it since.
Levi, let's just make a whole episode where you and I butcher the plot of Fight Club.
He's standing in the warehouse as the building behind just like all these buildings explode. And he's there with the girlfriend, whatever. And he's like, "You've met me at a very weird time in my life." You know that line or whatever? No.
I you know what? I thought I remembered Fight Club. And the more I'm thinking about it right now, the less I remember it. Should rewatch it.
You should. I think that's a worthwhile thing. Basically, I mean, at this point, if you haven't watched Fight Club and you're trying to avoid spoilers, that's on you. But you're watching someone's mental episode basically throughout the whole film. And then at the end, it seems like he's solved certain aspects of it. And then this girl that he's been spending a lot of time with through the film, who's like his partner, he's basically telling, "You know, this is a little bit of a weird time that you've met me." I'm butchering the line in the diehard fans of Fight Club. But I feel in a sense that, especially the way specifically my last few weeks have gone, I kind of feel like that in a way about starting the podcast, where it's almost I'm struggling because I so badly want to be able to paint a picture for what the real life of my headspace has been like.
Yeah.
And then I also don't want to just make it sound like I'm whining and just being depressive constantly.
I finally understand where this whole point was going, and I agree 100% entirely. I feel like I could just as confidently like talk into the mic and be like, "Hello, listeners, you've met me at a weird time."
Yeah.
Right? Like, had we started this a year ago or 2 years ago when we started talking about it, I think the headspaces that we were in were very different, and probably healthier and potentially better. But this just is the reality of, you know, where we're at right now. And some of it is obviously just down to the fact that this year has been like unlike anything we've ever experienced. And some of it has nothing to do with COVID. Some of it's just, you know, what things are right now. It's just a weird time.
Yeah, I imagine if we started this podcast 2 years ago, when I had planned to start it, I had envisioned it documenting on like an upward ramp at that time.
Right.
I had pictured the trajectory of things is going upwards, and if we have conversations on the way upwards, if we get upwards, we can reverse look back at it and say we were normal dudes.
Right.
And
yeah, the plan was I was in the thick of wedding making still. Yeah. Right. And we're just running together talking about like, we should document this, right? Mm-hmm. This is such a relatable time where it's like, it felt like we were on the cusp of like career changes. And like, yeah, it did feel like an upward trajectory in a way that, I don't know, at least I don't feel that way now.
I think that's what this year did. So my cousin has a donut shop in your location.
He just stopped by the studio the other day.
Did he actually?
Yeah, he did, just randomly.
That's fun.
Yeah, your cousin.
My cousin. He's one of those cousins that I never saw in person at many family events because they lived so far away, but was always the one that was 5 to 10 years older than me and doing the things that I imagined I would do I was their age, basically.
Yeah.
And we were having donuts at their place when we were in Hamilton, and he was kind of just talking through, you know, we had all these plans for expansion, and this year has caused, for the restaurant industry, it's just been a disaster.
Abysmal, yeah. It's been horrible.
And he was just saying, you know, I think that pause is helpful for me in the big picture. That pause I'm going to look back on and maybe be more grateful than I am now, because it's helping me realize I already have some of the things that I wanted all along, and I don't need to keep going for growth.
Dang, man.
I don't need 12 locations kind of thing.
This, surprisingly, like, that was actually really helpful for me, because you had mentioned what we had imagined was like, let's document this time of this upward momentum. Mm-hmm. And then one day we can look back and be like, wow, that really was pivotal.
Yeah.
And I think we're doing that now. I mean, we won't know if looking back, if we'll think this was smart or not, or if, you know, the apocalypse will have happened. But it is helpful for me to try and reposition my mindset and try and say, like, future me, future you will look back on this time and just in see so many things that we weren't seeing now. You know, listening right. back on these conversations, be like, oh, it's so interesting the way you thought about money back then, or so interesting to see the way you thought about creativity or your place in your career, or whether you thought you were at the top or the bottom, or whether you're going up or down. Mm. I actually do think we will look back on this time, regardless of where we think we're at right now. I'm excited to look back and actually see where we were.
Yeah, I agree. And what's nice about recording today is that in the timeline of the way December usually progresses for me, yesterday was the day that I did that thing where I decided, okay, we're going to let it all go now. Yeah. And this past month was harder because not only did it feel like I was letting go of my personal whatevers of 1 year, but it felt in a sense that I was having to let go of what my whole like fabricated vision was for the five years that I'd done previous. Mm-hmm. I'd been telling myself a story ever since I started taking more seriously this idea of doing what I'm doing now, that if I do this sequence of things, it can lead to these locations and that will be good. And the really hard part about this year is that it makes all of that. This was supposed to be the year that I doubled down on my education stuff and that I did XYZ for the business, and the previous 5 years of working so much would all have been like, hey, here's the reward of that effort. Like this was, it's like it feels like I was being, you know how farmers have to plan ahead and plant things and then water them? It feels as if I was doing that.
Yeah.
And I thought I was being really diligent with being forward focused and doing long-term plays. And I had made the mistake at the start of this year of thinking this will be a year that I get to reap some of the fruits of that. Dare I say, maybe suddenly have an influx of capital so that way I can do things like buy a place to live.
Oh, you know? Sorry.
What did you say?
Tungsten cube.
And I mean, this is tough for me because it's hard to, it's tough to kind of just lay, part of me doesn't want to lay it open like that without the full context, because I know that without context, there's so many different ways that that can be heard. And it's just, so I'm just, I guess I'm okay with that. But all of that to say, if I just, the end of the years are normally hard. And then to have this year feel like it's not just the end of the year, but the end of almost the decade for me.
Yeah.
And to have the decade ending in this way, I mean, next year will be year 10 of hitting publish on YouTube.
Wow.
And boy, is there a lot that could go along with that. The hopes and dreams that associate with that sentence. But that is just something that, I mean, so to put it bluntly, the whole Fight Club, hey, you're meeting me at a weird time. Mm-hmm. The last month was probably the strangest mental headspace month I've had in my adult life as of late.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm super grateful to not have had the hardships that other people have had in this year. Like, that's not lost on me. That some people have had even worse experiences of this year than I did. And I mean, we could explain away for ages and ages that, wow, we have so much. So that's not lost on me either. But yep, there's a little footnote in the story of my life of this was probably the hardest 3 weeks headspace wise for me.
A good thing that I can say about this year is that my capacity for empathy towards others, which I thought I was quite an empathetic person, but this year, it's really just exploded. Like, I have so much more empathy for people. Mm-hmm. And most of that comes down to examining myself and being like, wow, I know my experience in this year has been so much easier, let's say, than what a lot of people have gone through. And even my experience, it felt like it brought me to my knees, you know, metaphorically, like mm-hmm. I was at the absolute tip of what I thought I was, like what my capacity was, like my capacity for sadness. I don't know, you know, I really felt like I didn't know if I could ever even handle more. And that's as someone who I didn't lose work. You know, I was still able to work for the year. I was still able to work in a career that I love. So now when I hear other people of like their struggles from this year, it's like, I have literally no judgment, right? Because I've reacted in ways I never would have expected. And I felt things I never would have expected. And so now I just like go into conversations. I go into really, and even just watching The Bachelorette, which is a bit of a sideball of what I've been doing this year. But like, I just see other people so much more, empathetically, empathically. I don't know. And that's been good.
Man, we're much more aware of how I think that is a really big positive of just being more aware of the other, especially the other that you don't see in your day-to-day life, and just understanding that some people's experience is very challenging.
Yeah, I just heard the other day that John Mulaney checked himself into rehab.
Way to go, John Mulaney. That's
I know. It's what's so interesting though is it's that it's simultaneously, like obviously, what a great step. That's a big step, and it's so sad, right? Because he's someone who's been sober for a long time, and my heart just goes out to so many people. I have a feeling like relapses and stuff like that are just at an all-time high right now. Had I been someone that had struggled with like substance abuse addictions and stuff in my past, I'd be shocked if I didn't relapse this year. Mm-hmm. Just knowing myself well enough, I'd be absolutely shocked if I didn't lean on those vices.
If this conversation for the listener, I guess we should trigger warning at the start of this, but just we've got some resources in the show notes of just places you can go to kind of look for answers and get help with what you're working on. Yeah. But certainly I think the worst case scenario for whatever it is that you're currently battling with is just keeping that internal, because it's way too easy to do that. And that is what ends up, really isolating you in a very bad way.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about the stats Canada wide, but most overdoses this year so far have happened alone in residences.
Yeah.
And that is just mind blowing to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And like from a lot of people that you just never would have seen it coming from.
Yeah. Your stereotype doesn't fit the script. It doesn't work.
Which is, I mean, I really, this isn't kind of like a subject that I want to be like, but look on the bright side, right? But I would like to say, I think it is important to hear those stories so that people can learn to empathize, right? That like depression or substance abuse or any of these struggles that often seem for some people like that's an issue for others or like, right? For this type of person, like it is, I think for someone like myself, helpful to learn this is an anybody issue. This could come for you just as easily as, you know, the other that you've heard about it as. So that's what happens when we try and talk about what 2020's been like, huh?
Yeah, and I think it'd be it is.
A couple of years ago, I think it was the end of 2018. Around this time, I was like, I tweeted, these are my goals for next year, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, I wanted to transition into making YouTube, like this is my full-time thing.
Yeah.
But one of the things on that list for me was I said, I need to hire an editor. And I even wrote out like,
because I it won't be sustainable for me if I don't. And that was going into 2019. Here we are at the end of 2020. And I have now been working with an editor, but more so a collaborator for the last 3 months with Florence. And it took me way longer than it should have. But wow, that has been wonderful.
Hey, do you want to start your own podcast? Head over to Transistor and use my coupon, transistor.fm/Justin. You'll get 15% off your first year of podcast hosting.
What a massive step. That is, there's so much baggage for, I think, the way that you and I think about what we're doing and the future between allowing ourselves to ask people if we can pay them to help us.
Yeah, I've known for so long that I needed to, but I've had all these fears about like the ways in which that could go wrong.
Yes.
And so I've avoided it. You know, I've, especially back when I shot weddings, like there were times where I did try and contract out a job, you know, just pay some random person online. And it didn't go well and I'd have to redo it. And then furthermore, you know, there's that fear. And then there was the fear of, if we invite someone into this studio environment, what is the dynamic going to be like? Just personalities.
Yeah.
And I was so afraid of just putting it out there, like, send me your editing reel and I'll pick the best one and you can come work with me. And then have them show up and just totally be, I don't know what they would be, but just something contrasting with the dynamics of the workspace in a way that was unhealthy. And so I pretty much just avoided it. I had all these fears of the ways in which hiring someone could go wrong. And rather than try, I just didn't. I just didn't do it all. And then
the layer of how are you supposed to legally hire and add someone and pay, like all those extra layers that just stacked on top.
Right. There's just the practical sides of it that get very tricky.
Where's the handbook of how to have someone help you and you pay them in Canada? Like,
it was hard enough trying to figure out how to just be a sole proprietor and take on work in a legal way. Yeah. And now all of a sudden it's like, wait, I'm a business, you know, I employ people. That's bizarre.
Am I supposed to be, what is vacation? Do I vacation pay?
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason I got to this was because this fall, as things were at like an all-time like pressure cooker point of stress for me, I realized, I was like, I will not be able to finish these projects that I have to do without someone's help.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could no longer put it off because I knew I just wouldn't be able to move forward otherwise. It was my only option. And so instead of, you know, just reaching out online, seeing who could, I reached out to a friend of mine, Florence, who lives in Toronto, but is a longtime Hamilton resident, let's say, and fellow collaborator. So they've been in and out of the studio, working with different people here for several years now. And they edit toy commercials and reality TV. I think they did a bunch of the, what is it, Great Canadian Bake Off? I don't know, whatever, one of those shows, MasterChef Canada, just editing reality TV shows. And in the past, I've had them do a couple little edits for me, the intro to my van announcement video, the Tesla video. And so I knew that they were a talented editor. I also knew that they got paid well. If you work in film, editors make good money.
Mm-hmm.
Money that I cannot afford on a regular basis. But I was in such like a stressful, dire situation that I just reached out to them. I was like, could you not book editing jobs for like October, November and just come work for me? I was like, I'll float your salary for 2 months if you just like come work for me. And they were so excited to do that. Like just so excited because I don't know. I don't know if you have any desire to be a reality TV show editor or, you know, a Mattel toy commercial editor. But it's not exactly the most gratifying experience.
I mean, that was a really fun phone call when you told me, yeah, I actually committed. Mm-hmm. And I finally did that. Cause again, we had been talking, hey, we need to hire help in our own different ways for ages.
Yeah.
and the baggage of, well, what will this change the things that I'm making on YouTube? And it's mm-hmm. it's a YouTube channel, so will people look down on me if I'm not the one doing all the editing and all the creating? And yeah. And that jump to actually open your mouth and say, hey, could you possibly consider taking some time to work with me? That was a big jump.
Yeah, I'm just going to take my sweater off real quick.
Oh, you do that.
Oh, you said something there. I didn't realize I was wearing this. You mentioned something there, that fear of, you know, how will my content be perceived? And I have mm-hmm. spoken to other friends with YouTube channels that actually warned me, like, just get ready, because when you hire an editor, people's perspective of you changes.
Right.
Because it's no longer like you lose an element of relatability. You're not just that guy just being wacky, you know, making silly videos out of his bedroom or his van or whatever, right? All of a sudden you feel more like, I don't know, more established, and people love to root for you when you're the underdog. They love to, you know, cheer you on the come up. Things do change. Things do change when you make it.
And I mean, I'm realizing this discrepancy in the way that I tell my own narrative to myself is I probably have this little mental superiority complex of, well, I'm not hiring because, I mean, the punchline of this conversation is we both hired people this year to help us. So yeah. that is what we're moving towards here. And for me, I'm thinking in my head, yeah, I didn't hire someone just to help with YouTube. I hired them to help with some of my other things too. Mm-hmm. You know, so in my head, I'm like giving myself the tools to be able to have a narrative that feels like it meshes with my worldview of.
Right. I mean, I've probably done the same thing, but maybe mine isn't just lying. I mean, what I want for the future of the channel is that I want it to feel more like a collaborative environment. I want to show people that, like, creating things, there's just like, there is a joy to making things, and that it doesn't need to be a solo insular experience. It's not just about making things yourself, right? You've been saying life's better when you make things, and for some reason I've told myself for years that making things was about what can I as a solo individual make. And I kind of had to break that. I had to say, like, no, making things collaborative, like the collaborative process is just as joy-giving and just as fulfilling as any solo projects I've ever done. Heck, it's probably more fulfilling.
Without question, yeah, I would agree with that. Those are my favorite things that I've done have been with other people.
Yeah. And for me, it's been that, you know, I'm always aware of the weak points of my video, right? When I put out a video for the last few years, I know, you know, the sound design could have been better, the graphics could have been better. There's all these parts of my video. I know where it falls short. What's fun is when you're in a collaborative environment, you're able to say, like, this is my skill set. These are my strengths. And I'm going to put that forward into this process. And like you over there, like you have these strengths, you have these skills, you put a little in. It's like a potluck. And I actually think that's a wonderful way to view the creative process, as a potluck where we all just bring forward what we have. And then not only do we get to eat a great meal or watch a great video, but the process itself, the meal, the making of it, it's just a joy. It's just like good to be with people.
I mean, that feels like a summation of what I enjoyed so much about making videos in your space.
Yeah, I loved having you here for that. It was like that and then exponentially larger. There's usually, for those that don't know, there's four people right now that work out of my studio pretty much full time. And we all do, three of us that work in here full time, that we all do our own thing. And now with Florence, you know, working with me, but also Florence works with Christoph and Brandon and Josh in here whenever they need help. But then adding another person to it is just that much more fun, because there are skills that everyone has that other people don't have.
So now, are you, I'm assuming that you're relieved that you've made this step this year. Is there a sense of relief, or?
Ooh, there is a sense of relief. But again, this only started with Florence, where I was like, I can float your salary for 2 months. And I know I won't make any money. I'll just like shovel everything over to you, as like a survival tactic for myself. And now they're at the point where they really don't want to go back to their job.
The survival tactic thing, just again, to paint the picture for some people that might not be fully aware, like Jesse's had a rough go in the second half of this year with, we don't need to like make the laundry list, but there's been break-ins, stuff stolen. There's stuff going on that has made the normal flow of just making things, and then you throw the pandemic on it. Okay, there's just been extra stuff as well that we don't need to digress.
Yeah, I don't want it to be a sob story because everyone's had a hard year,
right?
And for me, that ended up at the point where I was like, I can't sit at a computer and feel just creative. I'm not. Yeah. I can't just force a flow state right now. And so I just knew I needed someone else that when I'm not able to get into that flow state or get into that creative mind space or feel like I want to make anything, having someone else that can just be like, oh, I'm in the, like, why don't I just lead this for a little bit? Why don't I come up with an idea and you just follow along or you just collaborate with my idea, has been just so helpful. I can't even describe how much of a burden that's lifted off of my shoulders to not always have to be the one initiating things. Initiate, like coming up with the idea and executing on the idea and then marketing the idea and being the face of the idea, right? It's yeah. When you are not doing well mentally, it is very hard to not only put yourself on camera, but then have to like watch yourself and edit yourself and It's not fun.
Yeah, I'm assuming that the windows of downtime where you're kind of your brain is offline and you're really struggling to get back online with your process, I'm assuming that those windows of downtime will be more healthy or just shorter than they maybe were previously, where hey, I got to show up because there's someone that I'm paying to be there. And so I got to show up.
Yeah, so that's very much the case. They're driving in from Toronto. I can't just be like, I'm going to sleep in. I'm going to stay home. You know, I'm not feeling so good today. Because they're like, well, you're kind of paying me and I'm just sitting here. Is there anything I can work on? That really helps.
Bringing in some of that structure from a normal job that makes, I mean, it's the defined boundaries that allow things to actually happen.
Yeah.
And when you're on your own and you're just doing whatever you want, it can be the amazing things that offers, but then it also creates this opportunity for sometimes weeks to go by where you're just in a black hole of nothingness.
Yeah. That like chaotic free form energy that can be so fun when you're starting out, of like, I can do anything, I can do whatever, it's all up to me, like, you know, I'm the boss. It's really fun, and it works at the beginning, but then eventually you do just kind of quickly realize, like, oh, if I want this to be sustainable, if I want to be able to keep, even if I want to be able to keep having some of that chaotic energy sometimes, I just do need to integrate some structure. I do need some of that regular job structure involved. And I was mentioning before, you know, because Florence doesn't want to go back to work at the reality TV editing, they're actually like motivated to be like, okay, how do we find some more jobs? How do we come up with some more projects so that, like, they're basically saying, how do we make you more money so that I can stick around and we can keep doing this thing that we both love together? And that's just, it's great. But enough about.
It's not like you had a year of runway to pay a salary for a year of an additional employee. It literally has to start working and add value above the normal average. That way you can bear the weight of an employee.
Yep. It started with, I'm okay to sacrifice financially right now for the benefit of sanity. But obviously that you can't do that forever. I can't just be at a loss month over month when I've got a wife and kids and a mortgage and stuff like that. But yeah, tell me about your process of bringing someone on.
Well, I'm also reminded as you're kind of talking about some of those like intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, like what you're able to drive yourself with internally and then the external factors that allow that drive you. Mm. And for me, the knowing that there's people out there that are waiting for the next thing I make is helpful. Mm. I mean, that's part of what I really enjoy about putting things out into the internet is that then there's people there to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably wouldn't spend as much time on some of the projects that I make if they were only going to be viewed by me and my family. You know, it's a lot of the effort is for, so that's like an extrinsic motivation and people knowing that I upload roughly every week is a helpful thing for me, because then I know when 2 weeks go by and I haven't uploaded, there's a little voice in my head that goes, oh, hey, you haven't really done the thing. You should probably do the thing. And then so adding more and more layers that are healthy and helpful of, hey, these are some of the focusing layers that help you actually do what you want to do. So it doesn't always have to be like brute forced self-will. That is great. And for me, I have experienced the benefits as well. So this year there's been a friend who actually met years back in an outdoor program where I was one of the intern leaders for the program, and he was a student, and he was, I could tell pretty straight away, very keen on video and just loved all aspects of it, which was fun. And once the 8-month program was over, kind of went on with life, and our paths kept crossing where I would be like, hey, do you want to come shoot this thing where we drive down for 2 weeks to the desert and film this thing? And honestly, I am just doing it because I want to. Are you interested? And they were like, yeah, I would love to. And so this is kind of how that friendship like formed. And his name's Nick Thielman. And
hey, Nick.
Over the years, his skill set definitely progressed in the same way that mine did at his age. And I was in my head always going, yeah, I'm going to hire him. And then another local production company who does more work on a regular interval, they ended up hiring him because they actually had
him up.
A normal job to offer. And I didn't have a job to offer. And when you're at that age, I'm assuming, I guess I'm going to speak on his behalf, but I'm assuming he wanted some amount of structure or reliability.
Yep. Yeah.
They were working at a chicken farm, and then they left the chicken farm to go work for a production company. Like it was legit. It was real. And I didn't have that to offer.
Right.
And I'm very good friends with the production company that he went to work with. So here was a friend that I really wanted to hire to help me do adventure film stuff, because not everybody who does video enjoys hiking 6 hours into the mountains just to get a better shot. That's not everyone's DNA.
Yeah, it's not my DNA.
And for some reason, we get a kick out of it. So that's kind of, there's like an extra layer of the type of person you're looking for to do the type of work that we want to do.
Do you think that when Nick got scooped up because there was an opportunity for more reliable work, do you think that, like, you know, lit a bit of a fire under you to be like, oh, okay, if I can get this to a place where I can have consistent work, then it's more likely that I can get someone? Or
yes, and the reason why the barriers I had to hiring someone was in the early days, I was fearful of hiring someone on and then that forcing me into a certain pathway that I did not want to stay on. So I highly valued flexibility and being able to change course, because I didn't know which course I wanted to go. And if I got too ambitious trying to build out something just for the sake of building it out, I might end up locking myself into a pathway that I don't want to be on. And so the way that I envision that going out is, okay, so I make videos now and people pay me to make them. So I should start a production company, rent an office, hire employees. And now we make those kinds of videos for other businesses on repeat over and over and over again. That to me was almost one of my worst nightmares, because I knew pretty early on, I didn't want to run a production company that made videos for businesses over and over and over again. So if I started hiring on people to help me do that, and then I'm paying their wages, and then suddenly there's a $15,000 to $30,000 overhead for multiple employees with a rental, I'm just going to spend the rest of my life looking for work for these people now, and I won't be able to have the whimsical energy I wanted in my early 20s to be able to rapidly go, hey, let's go try this. Hey, let's go try this. And so to insulate, to be able to take on risk like that, the way that I saw that being possible was just keep overhead as stupid low as possible. And hiring someone on, to me, always meant, well, I don't have enough money to do that right now. So that means I'd have to take on more work, which means we'd be more busy, which means I'd have less headspace to figure out what it is that I'm trying to do with my life.
Yeah, that is a way of articulating how I've felt for the last 2 years that I have never been able to get out of my mouth. So thank you for saying that.
No problem.
Okay, so I've got two questions for you here. The first one's hopefully a quick answer. The second one we'll probably dive into a bit more. Now that the first 6 months where you said this isn't about focusing on the return on the investment is over, moving into 2021, is that going to be more of the focus with this? Is it going to be about kind of doubling down and seeing, okay, how do we actually make this make sense on more than just a emotional level for you?
Do I answer that and then you ask the second one?
Yeah. The okay. Second one is almost unrelated.
Perfect. I would say I'm conflicted because I think part of what it means to be a good boss is to insulate those that you're working with from the stresses of what it means to be a boss.
Mm. Oof. Wow, Levi. That's a good line.
Someone else said it, so I'm just I can't remember said it.
You take credit for that.
And I think part of that is, you know, when I worked at bike shops growing up, I didn't have to bear the stress of, like, for me, every year when we would order in our stock for the beginning of the season, that to me was always this joyful, really fun thing in the shop. But for the owner, now that I understand more about the equity in a bike shop, like, these are hundreds of thousands of dollars they're putting into a stock that if they don't sell by the end of the year, they're at a loss.
Right. Wow. That is so interesting.
And they have to mark, because, I mean, bikes are expensive and the margins aren't insanely amazing. And so they're trying to make these decisions of, we'll get five of this bike in medium and we'll get five of this one. And what you end up having in your shop is what customers see when they come in. So they only know that that's maybe available. So if you don't have that one really nice expensive bike and they don't know that they can get that as an option, they might not buy it from you and they might go to the next guy. So it's a stressful process of stocking your shop. At least maybe that's not the case for every owner, but I could imagine at various stages, it's stressful to stock your shop and you have a lot of money tied up in these bikes.
Yeah.
And I never had to bear that as an employee. And I don't think that was my responsibility ever. Maybe if I had moved up to like a manager type role, then I'd bear more of that. But I was trying to figure out how to have this conversation with Nick because I wanted to let him know, hey, I was hoping by this point to have a more clear pathway of how all the numbers were going to work out for next year. I was anticipating that. I was anticipating having launched maybe a micro, rougher version of our product earlier, so that way we could start to see some return on these things that we've been working at. And I just had to be like, I don't know if he pictured the conversation being awkward, but immediately at the start of the conversation, I was like, by the way, this isn't me telling you that you're fired. I was like, so everything that I'm about to say, don't hear it under a lens of, I can't afford to keep hiring you. Like, so don't hear it
right,
that
right.
way.
Let's start there.
So no, I'm not firing you, but I am trying to figure out into next year how to make specific decisions that make this more possible to continue in a way that's going to be really healthy.
Yeah.
And I believe that I will get there and the pieces are in play and I need to make smart decisions and take action on those decisions. So my answer to you, yes, part of the reason why I had a really rough go closing in is it is challenging for me in my current state to imagine what moving forward actually looks like practically, because so many of my expectations, this is why expectations are dangerous, are not being met in the way that I had anticipated. That's not specifically talking about hiring someone. I still do think in the future, I'll look back and be so stoked that even in a year that I had no idea where our next projects were coming from, and where our sponsored videos on YouTube aren't enough to sustain us, even in that year, I made a bold move of hiring someone on. And I do think we will look back on that and be so grateful that I did.
Nice.
So that's my answer to that.
That's a great answer. Okay. Question number two. I don't yet know exactly who our audience is. Right.
Oh, right.
But I think I would imagine there are a lot of people that are in earlier stages, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they've never employed someone or brought someone else on. But I would love to talk about...
Isn't that just weird that we are in a moment, in a couple month period, we're suddenly on the other side of that? Because for the longest time, we were pre that.
Yep.
And now we're on the other...
I didn't even notice when it happened, but apparently it's happened.
I mean, I hired contractors, I paid people to work, but I've never had like someone... And in an instant, we've suddenly moved from solo, single thing to we're now not that thing.
Yeah. So what are some of the like pieces of advice you'd give someone moving forward to decide whether or not they should look into branching out, right? Like the first thing I think would be important is to figure out like, I mean, if this is a YouTube thing, let's say, like, what do you want your channel to be? What is... Is it about you and your creative visions? Because I think there is a genuine concern and a very real possibility that by bringing on more people, it does become less you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there's any way around that. I think the truth is if you want it to just be you, then you have to let go of your very specific expectations of like quality, let's say, maybe not even quality, but style. Like you can no longer have such a concrete idea on what you're making and what it's going to be. You just have to let go of that a little bit.
Yeah, it's almost that balance of speed of movement of getting things shipped and out the door versus having them actually meet up to what your brain is visioning as what it could be. Mm-hmm. And you got to, I do think YouTube channels as a whole benefit from speed of having things go out the door.
Yeah.
And if you're wanting to actually bring someone on to help with some of your YouTube videos, I mean, there probably should be a tiny little footnote put in that because Nick actually hasn't helped me so far with many YouTube videos.
Right.
But I would say you got to be okay with balancing, okay, I'm deciding to prioritize getting videos finished and published sooner than having the videos that are published meet more of what I see in my head. So mm-hmm. there's like one's got to dial back and then the other can dial forward. And if you're willing to start with that compromise, because it is a compromise, then you can experience some of the benefits that would come out of that is, hey, videos are actually getting done.
Yeah.
Because there's like, in my head, there's like two headspaces. It's either do you preemptively hire someone before you get overwhelmed or do you get so overwhelmed and then hire someone?
Oof.
And I think we both did the latter. And I imagine that there's some people out there, probably similar people that would save up 6 months of runway before they quit their job to go full time on their creative venture. Those kinds of people would probably make the decision to bring someone on earlier, mm-hmm. earlier. Whereas I had no runway when I went full time and I was perfectly fine with that, you know, and that maybe I should have had runway. Maybe I shouldn't have, but, I certainly didn't have, I quit my full time job and suddenly I was okay. Where do I make money? And this is hilarious, Jesse. When I bought an engagement ring to propose, it was right around the time I was quitting the full, like when I worked with the outdoor program, I wasn't making a lot. It was more so the lifestyle of doing the job because I get to do an outdoor job and work with people.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like banking. I wasn't banking massive paychecks per se. But I bought this engagement ring to propose. I proposed and I had to borrow money for my parents to pay for the ferry ticket to get off the island that we were currently on.
Wow.
Like, that's how tight I run the margins sometimes.
Yeah.
And some people could hear that and go, I would never want my daughter to marry someone that just spent one of their last paychecks on a wedding ring.
Yep.
My poor father-in-law, if he ever hears this. So, I mean, that is to just give a perspective for the listener of the kind of margins that I my risk tolerance per se. And now that my responsibilities in life are much more, my risk tolerances have changed, right? Where I now have child, and I want to feed that child. And I, so my risk, I wouldn't do the same decisions now as I could then. So it's like, whatever stage you're at, can you accept the risk of bearing more expenditures on humans? Can you pay people?
Wow, man, getting an employee is kind of like having a baby, in that when you're a solo creator, you are able to make more of those risks. You can, you can switch out. Heck, you can quit, right? Mm-hmm. You can just stop. You can do all these things that, not that you can't do when you bring more people on, but that just get more complicated. You're a bigger ship. You can't make such tight turns. You have to just be considerate of the other people. And I was definitely afraid of that idea that I still wanted complete, total control. I wanted to be able to say at any moment, I can do this, I can do that, I can go here, I can pivot my channel, whatever. But as you bring people on, you, at least if you want to be a decent person, I guess, you should consider how it affects those that work with you, that work for you, whatever.
I always envisioned that I'd be the kind of boss that would give an epic Christmas bonus, and this year not going quite the way that I expected. It was challenging for me to reconcile that my first year with an employee, I didn't cut this like massive Christmas bonus to send them off to the holidays.
Right.
That is certainly not the vision I had when I got into wanting to start. What would be your advice for the right time to bring someone on and things to consider? Or, I mean, it's weird both of us saying we wish we had brought on help sooner, but does that mean we actually should have brought on help sooner, or did we bring on help at the perfect time?
It's a fantastic question, Mr. Levi. I don't know. And to an extent, you can never know, right? There's always a risk of, had you brought someone on earlier and you weren't ready for just the weight of that responsibility of someone else that needs from you. It's like having a kid too young, right? It's just harder. No regrets. I don't know if I should have brought someone on earlier or if it was the right time, but... Ooh, I lost where I was going with that. What's the question again? Like, what would I...
Yeah, like, so, I mean, we probably are arguably not the people to give advice on hiring people, but for our, when we're looking at other creators creators or business owners or people that want to hire on people that to help with their making ventures, I mean, it is, what eventually made me pull the gun is that I knew I should have hired someone sooner. And when that compounded over time, the case was so persuasive that I finally did it. Mm-hmm. So that makes me wonder, would I have experienced so much more benefit if I had made that decision sooner, or did we make it at the exact right time for the way that we are operating our lives?
Yeah. So I think I view my life, like it's kind of split into two places. So I have my internet life and then I have my regular life, you know, like the meals you eat, the pillow you sleep on, just the people that you see face to face. And for me anyways, I had to let go of this idea of like the more unhealthy parts or the more unhealthy things that happen in my mind, like these desires to be, I don't think famous is it, but these just desire to be respected or well loved in an online space. I actually had to start letting go of that because because it is so much more important that my actual life, my family, my community, the people around me that I make eye contact with, that has to be the priority, at least in terms of a recipe for long-term success. And I would assume happiness. And so I knew that bringing someone on meant my day-to-day happiness levels, like the things that happen in my real life, would be better. And so it got to a point where I was willing to say, there's a possibility my videos might get worse, right? If I don't have complete control, there's a possibility that I will be perceived differently. Like I'm no longer that solo creator that's just like doing it from his bedroom. There's a very real possibility that people will see me differently and like me less in the online part of my life. But I had to just get to the point where I said, that's less important than my actual life. And my actual life, if I really boil it down, is my wife and my kids. And I think it was getting to a point where I was so much more stressed, so much more often, trying to be well-loved and well-respected by the people in my internet life, that I was becoming less well-liked and well-respected by not just my wife, but myself. So what I would say is, Jesse, you need to really examine like what you want. What's the point of all of this? Mm-hmm. Why do you want to be a maker, a creator, whatever that creation might be? Is it for just a career? Because some people, they get into the YouTube world and they're just, and I say this with full compliments, they're entrepreneurs. They do this as an avenue for revenue, because that revenue affects their actual life. And some people get into it. I'm not sure if this is me, but probably to an extent, like I definitely want to be liked by people. Like it's a deep desire of mine, is that people like me. And I would guess that that more unhealthy side of myself also pushes me towards being an internet creator, because you can get more people to like you that way. So you have to examine what you want out of this whole thing. Are you getting into it just to build a business? Are you getting into it for some self-satisfaction, whatever, before you can even decide, should I bring someone on?
Man, that, well, we've got our podcast intro highlight right in the last.
Right.
That is some, I'm going to be thinking about that for a while. Some of the sentences that just came out of your mouth, Jesse.
You know what's funny, Levi? I mean, I don't know if we're making a good podcast here, but what I do know is every time we sit down and have one of these conversations, it feels a little bit like microtherapy, because you'll say something, like you'll give me an insight into my own life, or you'll articulate something for me that I've felt but haven't known how to say. So if for nothing else, then I find these conversations very beneficial, I'm quite happy.
I think that's a great place to wrap up today.
We would love to continue the conversation with you on the Twitters. Use hashtag MakeStuffClub to get our attention. You can also find us at Jesse Driftwood and The Levi Allen, both spelled out in the show notes down below or wherever you find them in your podcast app. This episode was edited by me, Levi Allen. Our theme music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Oh, that is fun to say in our own podcast after loving mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder's tracks. We hope to be back in your feeds this time next week if we get the show up on time. Peace.
Podcast hosting is provided by Transistor.fm. They host our MP3 files, generate our RSS feed, provide us with analytics, and help us distribute the show to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. If you want to start your own podcast or you want to switch to Transistor, go to transistor.fm/Justin and get 15% off your first year.